ॐ भद्रं करने दृश्यमियामदेवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यचत्वाः स्थिरायरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः त्यशेम देवहितन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्धधातु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। See you on verse 15, the one that starts with Eta Smart Jayate. Everybody there? Okay. Eta Smart Jayate Pranaha. Eta Smart Jayate Pranaha. Manasarvendriyanicha. Kambayurjyotirapascha Prithivina. Kambayurjyotirapascha prithivi vishwasya dharini etasmat jayate pranaha manaha sarva indriyani cha kam vayuhu jyotihi Apaha cha prithivi vishwasya dharini.
We don't have cha.
Oh, you don't? Which one? Which cha do you have?
We just don't have cha.
You have just apaha, right?
Apaha.
Yeah.
We have apaha prithivi.
There's a lot of different versions. In fact, the three books that we have are three different versions. So that's all right. They're close enough. Sometimes the shlokas are grouped differently. In all three, the shlokas are grouped differently, but most of the content is the same. That's why I never know what number you... For me, I'm on number 18. You're on number 15. Okay. In the previous verse, actually in the previous three verses, we've been going through the Anvaya Vyatireka, the waking dream and deep sleep. The Anvaya Vyatireka, remember, it's kind of a very important piece of logic. It's an important piece of logic to just apply to your own self-experience for being able to differentiate your being. That your being from all of the experiences that you have that are coming and going. You're not coming and going. So who is it that's not coming and going? That's you. All the things that are coming and going are the anatma, they're mitya, they're away, they're not your being because you can be without them. If you're there before, during, and after something, you're not that thing that is left. You're not the thing that hasn't come, you're not the thing that is left. Right, so you're going to be that which is there as the self, as the conscious being perfect to all the experiences that you have. And so how to differentiate your being from these experiences that can be objectified, that go through change, that come into being and go out of being. We use this Anvaya Vyatireka logic for that. The Anvaya Vyatireka is this. The Anvaya goes like this. When this is, that is. Right? When this, whatever it is, when this is, that is. The Vyatireka is, when this is not, that is not. If you have, in any given situation, both the Anvaya and the Vyatireka, the positive assertion and the negative, then you can say these two things are related. They're dependent on each other. Right? When this thing is, that is. When this goes, that goes. So there's a definite relationship, like when the sun is, the day is. When the sun is, you know, when the sun is, the day is. This is a failed Anvajyatireka. When the sun is, the day is. When the sun, no, that's, this is a good Vyatireka Anvaya, this isn't failed. When the sun is, the day is. When the sun is not, the day is not. So now you know the sun, the day is totally dependent on the sun. You can't have the day without the sun. Right? So it shows the dependence between two things. So here, in reference to your being, I have to be able to say, you know, when I am, when this is I am, when this is not, I'm not. That would be a perfect anvayagatireka. So what if I were to be able to say, in what we've been doing, going through now, is what we call the avastatraya prakriya. Avastatraya means the three states of experience that we go through, the waking, dream, and deep sleep. You know, what are the three major experiences that any human being goes through in their 24-hour cycle? Other, you know, you have your waking state, your dream state, and your deep sleep state. Three experiences, and each one negates the other. In other words, it's very interesting. It's a kind of a nice Achilles heel for understanding who you really are. Because the three experiences negate each other. When the waking state is there, the dream state isn't there. Is it being experienced? You have to look at it like this. It's not that it isn't there once you say, you know what, if I go to sleep, the waking state is still here. Of course it is. Everybody else is awake and carrying on. I'm sleeping. So my going to sleep doesn't negate the existence of the waking state. But it does negate my experience of it. In other words, I am, the self experience is there, but the experience of the waking state is not. So my being, who I am, my self-experience, is independent of the waking state experience. That's the idea here, and that's the discernment that has to be made. So I can say, in terms of the anvayavyatireka, I can start out with a positive. When the waking state is here, when the waker is, I am. Of course. Here I am enjoying the waking state. Yes, I am here. When the waking state is here, I am. But I'm also here when the waking state is not here. That's the key. When the waking state is here, I am. When the dream state is here, I still am. What's important there is the dream state negates the waking state. You don't have the waking state experience and you have the dream experience. And so the one displaces the other. And yet I'm not displaced. I'm the self of both of those states. And then you can even say when the deep sleep state is, the waking state is not, the dream state is not, the deep sleep state is, I still am. Right? Now, one thing very important also about the deep sleep state, I still am as the conscious being, but there's no subject-object differentiation in the deep sleep. There's no knower known. There's no bhokta bhoga, you know, there's no enjoyer. There's no subject-object. Basically, there's no knower known. And so that, the fact that you can be, that you are, without the phenomena, the knower known phenomena, takes the knower known relationship away from your being. Consciousness is not a knower. You know? You need a mind and sense organs to be a knower. So in the waking state, as long as you have you have this physical body with a mind and sense organs, you have subject-object knowership, right? Think about it like this. In this waking state, if I were to lose my vision, I'm no longer a seer. I still am, but I no longer am a seer. If I become deaf, I still am. But this knowership, in reference to that particular sense organ, is no longer there, right? Even if I, from the waking state, this is a little bit of a tangential, but nevertheless, if in the waking state, in state of meditation, if I withdraw my mind, right, if I withdraw my mind from sense perception and quiet all the activity of the mind, there's no longer, say I go into samadhi, the mind is completely awake, it's not asleep, it's completely awake, but now it's focused on the nature of the self. At that time also there's no subject-object differentiation. That's what we call, we call the samadhi, just to kind of bring that in. But the thing to understand here is that because the waking state is I am, the dream state is, knocks off the waking state, I still am. The deep sleep state is, I still am. And then I go back to the waking state. The waking state, there's no commentary going on in the deep sleep state. In the waking state, I can describe, though, the deep sleep state. It's a memory. I can tell you, you know, in the deep sleep state, there's nothing happening at that time. There's no subject-object relationship. I slept well. All is well with me. I can go on and on about it, describing it. And everybody goes, yeah, that's how it was for me, too. We can all relate to it. But we also recognize that in that deep sleep state, there is no running commentary. And there's no subject-object relationship. Well, from the standpoint of consciousness, your being, the me, there's no subject-object relationship. There's no knowing known. There's just the aparoksha, the self-evident being that I am. And it's from this self-evident being that these verses have gone through during this whole Anvayagatireka, that it's this conscious being that is the self and pervasive to all of these three states. And it is the conscious being from whom these three states come and into whom they resolve. And that's really this vision, is what has to be understood, is that, in fact, just think like this. At the waking state here, replaced by the dream state. Waking state, waking world, waking body, waking sense organs, all there in the waking state. Dream state, that waking body and waking sense organs, all of those things are not there. All of the points of identification, all of these points of identification are not there in the waking in the dream state. Now I'm identified with a totally different body, different sense organs. I can even look different. I can change genders. Be identified with an animal, that's not so as common, but I can, the person I'm identified with can even be of a totally different appearance. You know? And so this body, which is me in the dream state, is different than this body, which is me in the waking state. Which means that I'm neither this body nor this body. Nor am I, and this body in the waking state belongs to the waking state, like the waker, the waking body, mind, sense organs, belongs to the waking state. It's part and parcel of it. So I move from this state with this waker in it into this state, the dream state, with the dream character in it. I have now, I still am, right? Mm-hmm. I'm the self of the waker and I'm the self of the dreamer. But what in the waking state belongs to me and what in the dream state belongs to me? Because everything in the dream state negates everything in the waking state. And so it's basically, what it basically shows you is you're not the waking body, nor are you the waking world. And you're not the dream body, nor are you the dream world. But you are the self of both. The waking body belongs to the waking world, and you are the self of that waking body and waking world. The dream body and dream world, right? The dream body belongs to the dream world, and you, who is the self of the waking world, is the self of the dream body that belongs to the dream world. So you're the self of the dream body and the dream world. And then those two states of experience are totally displaced by the deep sleep state, where there is no experience of duality, nor is there any, there's no body, and there's no world. There's just one big, I don't know anything. Right? And so now I, the conscious being, which is not a knower, you need a body, mind, sense organs to be a knower, I am, plus this giant, what I call giant Ajnanavritti. Ajnanavritti means there's just a big, I don't know. The mind has gone into unmanifest condition, into its causal state. And then now I, the conscious being, am, right? Plus this causal state, which in which the whole world is in what we call layam, or the whole world is resolved. So I am the self of that resolved state, I am the self of the waking state, I am the self of the dream state. And so the waking state resolves into me, the dream state resolves into me, the deep sleep state resolves into me, it comes and it goes, it comes and it goes, that's the Purnima death, right? There's this infinite, from this infinite, from that infinite, this infinite has come. And because of this infinite is sustained by that infinite, and into that infinite, this infinite comes. That's exactly what's being said here. Creation comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. And so at the end, here after having gone through this whole unfoldment of these three states of experience, in the previous verse, last two lines of the previous verse, he says that into which that, he says that jiva, I am the jiva. So interesting use about language. I am the jiva, which I can say I am the jiva, right? It means I am the conscious being. The jiva is Brahman, right? There is no jiva. There is no jiva other than Brahman. The thinking that you think that the jiva is a limited being, but there is no limited being. There is only Brahman, in fact. So when you say I am the jiva, I the jiva am the one, that's what he says in the text. I am the one in whom these three cities, the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state, resolve, and from whom they come. Right? So I the jiva means the truth of the jiva. I am the one from whom this world comes, is sustained, and into whom it goes. And so, see, when you call, when we use the term jiva, jiva means really you, the conscious being, viewed from the standpoint of ajnana, of ignorance, is this individual, transmigrating, going through birth after birth after birth, experiencing all of the three states of experience, engaged in the subject-object relationship. That's why we call you a jiva, an individual. But who is the jiva really? Right? Who is the jiva really? This is where exactly the satya mitya comes in. This kariya karana. Who is the jiva? It goes like this. If you keep in mind satya mitya, this body mind sense organs is the Atma. It is the self. Think of it like this. The body mind sense organs, this body mind sense organs is Brahman. It is Brahman. But Brahman, the self, the Atma, my being, is free of this. This body mind, that's what makes it mitya. This body mind sense organs is the conscious being. Nobody's going to deny that. You get into real trouble, in fact, if you miss this point. This body, mind, sense organs that I am, right? I am this. It is a conscious being. It is me. Right? The body, mind, that's another way to say it. This body, mind, sense organs is me. But I am not it. Or another way to say it. This body, mind, sense organs is me. But, and it's totally dependent on me. It is me. But I'm free of it. It's not free of me, but I'm free of it. That's why the whole satyam clay pot is the good satyam mitya example. The pot can say, you have to say like this. The pot, right, for the clay pot, the pot is the clay. Right? In fact, there's nothing there. The pot is the clay. But the clay is free of the pot. So just imagine I take a wet piece of clay and I make it into a pot. That pot is the clay. It is nothing else but the clay. There's no distance between the pot and the clay. It is the clay. But the clay is not the pot. The clay is totally free of the pot. There's no dependence on the pot whatsoever, where the pot is totally dependent on the clay. So now what if I say, from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, I am Brahman. I am Brahman. I can also say this whole universe is Brahman. Or I can say, I am the self. This whole universe is the self. I can say this body, mind, sense organs is me. It is me. It's not, it is me. But the me, this me, that what is me actually, is totally free of this. So what does that mean? Is that this body is me, but if this body drops dead, nothing happens to me. Literally, nothing happens to me. A good way to think about it is in the dream. In the dream, you're identified totally with the character in the dream. You're experiencing the dream from within the dream. Right? Your identity is that I am this dream character. This is me. And that is true. It is me. It's nobody else. It is totally me. But when the dream vanishes, when you wake up from the dream, the body-mind, the dream body-mind sense organs is totally on. The dream world is gone, and absolutely nothing has happened to me. That's the satyamitya. The mitya is, what makes something mitya is it totally depends upon me for its being. I am its being. I am its truth. But what makes it mitya is that it is dependent on, what it's dependent on for its truth is not dependent upon it. What it's dependent upon for its truth is called satyam. What is the truth? What is really there? So the mitya is dependent upon the satyam, but the satyam is not dependent on the mitya. So here the mitya clay, mitya pot, is dependent upon the satyam clay. But the satyam clay is not dependent on the mitya pot. And you use the rope snake. The mitya snake is dependent on the satyam rope. Right? But the satyam rope is not dependent on the mitya snake. Why is it important? Just because when the whole vision, when we say Advaita, the non-dual, is saying exactly this. All of this is me. All of it is me. It is totally dependent on me for its being. It is, I am it. Just like the clay can say, the clay is talking, that I am the pot. There is nothing there but me. It's only me. The pot is talking. The clay is talking. This is only me. There's nothing else. If you take the bas relief, we often use a bas relief, carving out of a block of clay where there's a whole intricate design of a city and people and animals and buildings and the sky and clouds all carved into this big chunk of clay, this big rectangular block of clay. The clay can say, there is nothing here but me. There's nothing here but me. But the building can say, but I'm the building. And people can say, I'm an individual person, and this is my friend, And this is my dog. And these are the plants, and these are the trees, All of those things are there. The clay said, this is nothing but me. It's nothing but me. But because of Ajnanam, each one of these objects, I'll say, yeah, but what about me? What about me? I'm here, and I'm here, and I'm here, and I'm here. And Clay will just say, yeah, you're all here, and you're all me. And so now, all of these objects, all of these things, all of these namarupas, are totally dependent on their being. There is nothing else for them there but Clay. But they have to be able to recognize that, rather than just be identified with the name and form that differentiates them one from another. So look at in this room how many objects. It's an infinite number of objects, because every object itself is made of smaller and smaller objects. Right? Every single thing that we can say is a name for a conglomerate. Right? So we can break down everything we can see here into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. So everything is infinitely differentiated from everything else. And I have to be able to say all of this is me. That there's nothing here but me. And so here as a jiva, as an individual, I have to be able, as an individual sitting here talking, the individual being obviously different from you, this body and that body, these sense organs, those sense organs. I am sentient, the rug is inert. Right? Here's a conscious being, here's an inert chair. all of these type of differentiations, I have to, sitting in the midst of them, be able to say, I am all of this. I am this. That, in fact, is this vision. I am the whole. There's nothing here but me. To understand that, though, this satya-mitya differentiation has to be, you have to get that. You have to get that in terms of your experience. How to get it? It's not just getting it intellectually. You have to actually see the truth of it. To see the truth of it means what? That here we are sitting in this room, you know, and there is a common denominator in our experience here. There's something in our experience which can't be differentiated from anything in this room. It can't be differentiated. And this, by differentiated here, I mean a little bit differently. I can say you are different from you and different from the rug. That's what I'm hearing, what I mean by differentiating. This thing is different from this thing is different from this thing is different from this thing. Everything is different from everything else. Mm. But if I say you are all me, there's something that is the same. I am you and 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 I am you. So what is the clay? What is it that is the clay here? Yeah. And that's what we have to recognize. And actually that oneness, that thing that is the same in all beings, we have to differentiate. That we have to differentiate, that which is the same in all beings, we have to differentiate from the differences. Like if I want to use we can use the word differentiate in that way, where I say, I want to differentiate the one clay from all of the parts. I have to differentiate the one from the many so that I can recognize the one and the many. Here I have to recognize the one and the many. And I am the one in the many. That's another important thing to understand. If there is one, which is the truth of the many, like the clay is the truth of the bas-relief, say, if there is one that is the truth of the many, that one has to be you. Why? Because there's only one. So, it has to be you because there isn't anything else. There's no other way. Otherwise, there's no place for you to be. Right? So you have to be that. And so that means, if that is so, you are either the one or you're not. Either you are the one or there's not one. Okay? Or you don't exist. You've got those choices. But the whole Upanishad, the whole Vedanta says there is only one, in fact. And if there is only one, then that must be you. Because you are. See, for all of us, we are. We do exist. Right? We are here. And now some of the Upanishad says, you are here. And the you that is here is only one. Yes, you are here. But you are not what you think you are. Right? You are the conscious being. You are the conscious being. But the conscious being that you are does not enjoy the limitations that you have given it. And the limitations that you have given it, in fact, are mitya. And every limitation that you have given it, if you analyze those limitations, right, those limitations themselves are something that come and go, right? They come and go. They're subject to birth and death. They're subject to continual change, right? They come and go. Everything in your experience, in fact, comes and goes as subject to continual change. Absolutely everything. Except for you. So that itself is, I say, like the Achilles heel. Because Achilles heel to reality is you're being a finite being. Because moment to moment to moment to moment, everything in your experience comes and goes except for one thing. Mm-hmm. which is your being. And your being never comes and goes. So you should be able to recognize that. Right? Saying something, if something goes, it's not you, period. That's it's over. So just look at all the things that go. Look at all the things that change. It's not you because it's gone. Just a little aside. Swamiji was, I had some nice talk discussions with Swamiji when I was in back east this time. And then we were talking about just this in terms of a sangha. He says that, you know, that we say the Atma is a sangha. A sangha means it's not attached. Not being attached is something which is the constant of our nature. That non-attachment is the constant of our nature, because everything that's continually changing, coming into being and going out of being, is not taking us into being and out of being. Every experience that we have, right, is coming and going and changing, but we're not changing as it changes. We're present to it, but we're not changing. That's the asanga. So he was talking about that in terms of our experiences in the world, where he was talking about his own freedom in reference to the day-to-day experiences that we have in the world. Because an identification with the body, or identification with the mind, or because of my value system or my likes and my dislikes, what happens is that experiences come. We have an experience. Say it's a bad one. We have an experience. Say we have a bad experience. Somebody says something mean to us or whatever. It's a bad experience. So now the experience has happened, right? And then it's over. Whoever caused that said this mean, nasty thing, they've left, okay? They come into the experience, say a mean, nasty thing to you, and they leave, right? Now, they're gone, right? I haven't gone with them. They have left. I'm still here. But the problem is, this is what he was talking about. The problem is often we tend to keep the experience inside. Like we keep the experience inside. The experience lingers like a vasana. Vasana means like a scent, you know. You use the example of it. If you have a beautiful bouquet of roses in your house and then you give them and somebody takes them away, the scent lingers, you know, as a beautiful rose scent. Well, here, beautiful or not beautiful, if somebody comes in and they do something, then they leave, do you let them leave? or do they stay lingering, you know, in your mind? Does the effect of their presence stay lingering in their mind, in your mind? And what he was talking about, this is a little bit of tangential on the side, but I wanted to share it anyway. What he was talking about is, for him, when the situation is over, it is over. You know? Good or bad. When the situation, he said, don't keep people inside. Don't keep the experiences inside. You know? When the experience is over, let it be over. You know? And then you have the next experience. And then he said, that's the sangha. That's vairagya, really. That's the essence of vairagya.
It's a skill?
It's knowledge, but it is a skill also. It's an application of your knowledge, really. Because we're used to keeping the experiences inside, you know, the reactions inside. And then your mind will go on living out the experience over and over and over again. You know, even though the situation is over. And he said, I would never be able to do all of the things that I do. He was talking about the different, he's got so many different organizations, so many people, so many things going on all of the time. That if I kept any of those things, if I held on to any of those things other than when I'm just working and dealing with them, that wouldn't be possible. You know? And that, in fact, I just find that such a beautiful thing. You know, it's just, if you allow, and in that way, also he was talking, you, if you can develop that understanding that really allows the mind to let go like that, then you don't have to be afraid of the situations also. Just think about it. It's really very neat. It's like, it's whatever the situation is, it comes, you deal with it, it's gone. It is there while you're dealing with it. Not before and not after. Because you're not carrying it with you. Right? And so if you're able to do that, if you have that type of objectivity, you're also free to be with the situation. One thing I've noticed for years this about Swamiji, and now in my own personal life I've started to understand it and apply it, and I've just recently recognized this connection. What he does is that when there's something to be done, like a phone call to be made, or a person needs to meet with you, for especially for him, there's always many, many things going on. A person needs to meet with you, a phone call needs to be made, a letter needs to be written, somebody wants something to be done. He just does it. As soon as it comes up, if it's at all possible, he does it right then and there. He does it and then it's over. You know? And so in that way, he keeps things moving, you know. He doesn't wait. Like say, for instance, sometimes I'll know that a phone call needs to be made. You know, then this is just it's just something I've learned from him in reference to this asanga. A phone call needs to be made. A phone call needs to be made. That's not going to go away. Good or bad, it needs to be made. Whether it takes time, it may take an hour phone call. It doesn't matter, that phone call still needs to be made. Now I can know that phone call needs to be made for 6 hours before I make it, or 2 days before I make it, or I can just make the phone call. Right? Because now it's risen up in your prarabdha. It's risen up in your mind. But this phone call needs to be made. It's a job that you have to do. And so do you want to carry that around with you, keeping that inside, or just do it? That's a little bit different than what I was talking about, but I see the application. I've seen time and time again that for him, when it comes up, when it's a job to be done, he just does it, and then it's over, and he moves on to the next thing, rather than letting these things pile up, you know? And it's very true in terms of anything that you want to avoid. If there's something that you want to avoid, then for him, he won't think like that. He'll just do it. And then he's free of it and you move on to the next thing. But then there's something that you want to avoid, and then you keep avoiding it. Right? Then what you're doing all the time until you deal with the thing is that what you're doing is avoiding. Okay? And so that avoiding takes a long time. So your mind becomes cluttered with carrying all of these type of things rather than just doing it. And if you just do it, you can just do it if you've learned to let things, to keep things in their place, to keep them outside. That's how he'll talk now. He's done this for several years now. Keep things outside. I never used to know really what he meant. Now I clearly know what he means. Keep things outside. Keep the people outside. You know? Keep the situations outside. Keep the people outside. Don't carry them around with you. You just do what needs to be, you do what needs to be done, and then you do the next thing, and then you do the next thing. It comes also so, so useful. You know, it keeps you so free. Right? But that is really the asanga. It means that your mind is sitting with, your mind is sitting there with who you are and dealing with the mitya. I mean, we have to do what I call mitya, this whole creation. As long as we have a body, mind, sense organs, it's there to be dealt with. So, deal with it. As it comes to you, deal with it. He doesn't put anything off, you know. As it comes, deal with it. When it's over, it's over. It's over the moment it's over. Yeah. And I just found that I liked it. So here, when we do this unbiased vipaka, this when this is that is, when this is not that is not, the vipaka breaks down, it's when this is that is, when this is not that still is. That particular logic, does that just apply to waking, dream, and deep sleep? It applies across the board to the satyam nitya, right? It's always there. That's always the reality, right? When this is, I am. When this is not, I still am. When this emotion is, I am. When this emotion is not, I still am. When this situation is, I am. When this situation is not, I still am. So, you know, when this moment is, I am. When this moment is gone, I still am. And when this thought is there, I am. When this thought is gone, I still am. That being the case, there's a space. This is why we do japa. There's a space between this thought I am, this next thought I still am. I am the one who's there free of both thoughts. Right? This feeling is I am. This feeling is replaced by this feeling, I still am. There's a me that is there untouched by both, the self of both. The viveka is to differentiate myself, the one who's not touched in any way by these changing experiences. And when the mind does that viveka, when the mind does that differentiation, then it discovers a home. The mind, by doing that differentiation, you discover a home. The home is me. Right? I am the home to the mind. I am the one who is never not there. I am the one who remains unpolluted or unstained or unhurt. You know, untouched. That's the asanga. I remain untouched by all of these feelings, moods, emotions of the mind. And therefore the mind has a stable home. Right? There's somebody who is there, right, that holds all of this changing phenomena. I am there. I hold all this changing phenomena. And I'm in no way touched by it, nor can I ever be touched by it. So that's the satyam nitya. I am the very truth of it, and I am totally free of it. These are either words, if they're just words that don't mean anything, but if these words are pointing to your own inner condition, which is what they're meant to do, then you start to recognize, you know, the stability of your own presence. And so after going through all this, what he says is, from this me, from this stable conscious being, which is Brahman, from this, the jayate, etasmat means from this, jayate is born the prana, the manas. The prana means the vital force, that which enlivens this body, the mind, right? All of the sense organs, all of the organs of action. So he talks about the jiva, the knower, this jiva upadi, the mind, the sense organs, the prana, the life force. All of that comes from me. And not only that, he says the space, kundalini space, Vayu, the air, the wind, Jyoti, the fire, Apaha, the waters, Prithivi, the Prithivi, the earth, which is Vishwasya Dharini, which supports everything. This entire creation comes from me. This body, mind, sense organs comes from me. The whole manifest creation comes from me. How to understand that? If you look at the waking state versus the dream state, what's the difference? What's the difference? I mean, the waking state, there's a waker, and there's a waker existing in a waking world. The dream state, what is there? There's a dreamer existing in a dream world. There's an individual existing within a world. We take the waking world to be more real than the dream world. Why? Why do we take one to be more real than the other? They both negate each other. Now they both negate each other. I'm either the waker, I'm not the dreamer. I'm not the waking world, I'm not the dream world. Both are mitya. You can say in relationship one to the other, the waking world lasts longer. or that the dream world is subjective, it comes out of the waking world, you can say that. But from the standpoint of the waking world to the self and the dream world to the self, both are equally mitya. Neither one has more of a reality than the other. You know? Like say, for instance, to understand this, say if we say, use the rope snake example, which is more real? The rope or the snake? So if a snake appears on a rope, right, a rope appears as a snake, then I say, okay, which is more real? The snake? The mitya snake, the snake that has been projected on the rope, or the rope? Well, from within this realm of reality, we'll say the rope is more real, of course. The snake is just a projection on the rope. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, from the standpoint of Brahman, from the standpoint of the self, which is more real? Both are mitya. One is Pratibhasika, one is a projected mitya, and one is the mitya of Ishwara. Right? But both are mitya. The snake, the rope is mitya, and the snake is mitya. So do we say that, how would you say, if both are mitya, do you say that one mitya is more real than another mitya? See what I mean? Both are mitya. Both have no being, no independent being. They're both mitya. So neither one is real. But then, from within the creation, you can say, the rope lasts longer. The rope has more reality. Why? Well, because it lasts longer. You know, it's not subjective. It's not your projection. So it's more real. You can say like that. You know, but in reality, it's mitya is mitya. Right? And so here it's the same. The waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep, all are mitya. You know, one is not more real than the other. I'm neither the waker and the waking state, nor am I the dreamer and the dream state, nor the deep sleep and the deep sleep state. I'm the truth of all three of them. And all three are equally mitya. And so that's what I need to recognize. So why I brought this out is when you think of the dream state, it's easy, it's so easy for you to understand the body, mind, sense organs, this person here is being part of the dream fabric. That the body, mind, sense organs that you enjoy here in the dream, because that's kind of like from an Archimedean point, I can look out at the dream and say, oh, you know, that whole thing comes together. The whole dream comes together. And all of the individuals and the trees and the sky and the earth and everything in the dream are all part of one panoramic picture. It's all one living story that comes together, and each part of it belongs. It's part of its warp and woof in the dream. And of course, when you wake up from the dream, everything goes. All of the jivas in the dream go, right? All the little body, mind, sense organs, they all go, and the dream world go. They're all, because they all come together, they all go together. They're all made of the same material, the same fabric. And so the what you take to be an individual body and this individual body, when you're looking at the dream as a whole, you see it as a mosaic made of many, many different interrelated parts. And your dream character was one of those parts, part of a bigger story. And you can also say, and in fact, that whole dream came from me. No problem. The whole dream came from me, is sustained by me, and goes back into me. The whole dream is mitya. It has no reality apart from me. I'm the truth of the whole thing. Because it's so easy to say that. Now you have to be able to have that same drishti, that same understanding in reference to the waking state. Right? You have to have that same... Why not? Why not? Because this body, mind, sense organs is as much part of the same fabric of this whole creation. There's a huge infinite story going on here of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. And the conscious being with which you are is a sangha. It's unattached. That's why you can go from waking to dream to deep sleep state. Nothing happens to you, but if it's a sangha, if it's unattached, then it's not contained by your body. You are not contained by this body because it's a sangha, it's unattached. It doesn't need this body to be. It's not dependent on this body at all. And so your me, the me that you are, is not in the form of this body, mind, sense organs, or any body, mind, sense organs. I, in fact, am the very being that is the self of this whole thing, not the self of just the body, mind, sense organs. I am the self of the whole. I am the whole. This whole thing comes from me, is sustained by me, goes back into me. That's what I need to recognize. To really recognize it, I have to see that the being, the isness that all of this enjoys, the knownness that all of this enjoys, is the amness and the being that makes me me, right? Just think of what the clay pot has to do to recognize I am the clay. It's a really interesting problem. The pot has to recognize I am the clay, and that the clay that I am is free of the pot. The pot has to recognize that. I have to recognize I am the self, and the self that I am is free of this body, mind, sense organs. I have to recognize it. It's a big thing to see, because the one who's recognizing it, you know, the one who has to recognize it, is all of these names and forms, like the sense organs and the mind and the physical body. All of these things have to be objectified and recognize the very self, the very conscious being that is their truth. It's an interesting situation, because there's no distance between the one and the other. It's like there's no distance between the pot and the clay, you know? Or if you look at the wave ocean example we use all the time, between all of the different waves, they have to recognize I am the water. And if there's only one water there, they have to recognize that. Mm. You know? Mm. If there's no distance at all, which makes it hard, because there is no distance at all between the wave and the water. So of course the wave thinks I'm the water, because it is. Of course I think I'm my body, because I am. Right? Of course I think I am my mind, because I am. Totally. But the realization is that I am my mind and I am free of my mind. I'm my mind, I'm free of my mind. I'm my body, I'm free of my body. And this universe, I'm free of this universe. That's what needs to be seen from so many ways. So the Upanishads are unfolding this over and over and over again, so many ways. So here, what he's saying is, from all of this whole creation, all of it, this waking state or dream state, all of it comes from me, he says. And then he says, I'll do this one more. Yet param brahma sarvatma, yet param brahma sarvatma, Vishwasya yatanam mahat, Vishwasya yatanam mahat, Sukshmat sukshmataram nityam, Sukshmat sukshmataram nityam, Tatvameva tvameva tat, Tatvameva tvameva tat. Yat param brahma sarvatma, Vishwasya ayatanam mahat, Sukshmat sukshmataram nityam, Tat twameva twameva tat. Says that which is param brahman. Brahman means the conscious being which is infinite. Param means there is nothing more. The param brahman, the self which is infinite. That param brahman is sarvatma, is the self of all. The param brahman. When we think Brahman is the infinite self, the self of the whole creation, that Brahman is the self of everything in the creation. Just that we forget about that. You know, like if I say, the whole dream comes from me. Right? I am the self of the dream. I am the Param Brahman. I am Param Brahma to the dream. I am the infinite self, the one from whom this whole dream comes. But then we have to recognize that Yes, I am the infinite self from whom the whole dream comes, and because of that, I am the self of everything in that dream. I am the self of the whole dream, and so I am the self of everything in that dream. Sarvatma, the Sarvatma means the self of all. So Brahman is Ishwara, it's the self of Ishwara. That's how we think of Brahman. The infinite self, the self of Ishwara. The self of Ishwara, of the whole infinite creation, is the self of all. That means everything in the creation enjoys that one self. That's what we mean by Sarvatma, the self of all. Param Brahman, which is the self of the whole infinite creation, is the self of everything in it. It is the Vishwasya Ayatanam, is the very basis of the Vishwa. Right? Brahman, Param Brahman, the infinite self, is the Ayatana, the container, the being, the basis, the adhishtanam, of the Vishwa, of the whole creation, and the self of everything in it. It is mahat, it is infinite. Sukshma, sukshmataram, it is sukshma, sukshmataram. The self is, the conscious being that you are, is subtler than the subtlest. Sukshma, sukshmataram, it is more subtle than the subtlest. It means that you can't, everything in the creation you can break down. Right? But what always remains is your being. Right? Always inside, as the substance of whatever it is you're analyzing, whether you're analyzing something that's physical or analyzing something that's subtle in the mind, whatever it is that you're looking at, what is inside of it as itself is the Atma. So say just on a physical plane, I'm analyzing an object like this lamp. This lamp is big. But I'm the content, the being is the content of this lamp. What if I'm analyzing an atom? What is the self of the atom? I'm the self of the atom. What if I'm analyzing a quark? I'm the self of the quark. What if I'm analyzing a thought? I'm the self of the thought. What if I'm analyzing the ahankara? I'm the self of the ahankara. There's nothing inside of me. There's nothing more subtle than me. There's nothing that pervades me. I am that which pervades everything. Right? There's nothing more subtle to pervade me. I'm the bottom line. So I am the subtler than the subtlest. Nitya means I am free from time. The whole creation, whether it be the dream state or the waking state, whatever state, time exists within duality. Right? Within duality, there's nothing that is, we can't say that there's any such thing as timeless. We can say change goes on changing. It's different than being nityam. Nityam means I'm free of time. It means the being that I am, the conscious consciousness itself, is not subject to change, it's not subject to duality. If I'm not subject to change, then the being that I am is. It's not subject to past, present, or future. So Nityam is the self, the consciousness that the being existence that illumines past, present, and future, but from its own standpoint has no past, present, or future. It just simply is. It is the infinite presence. That's what we mean, Nityam, the presence that's not subject to time. It's Nityam, that which is free of time. And that, Tattvameva, I am that. And that is me. Tat tvameva tvameva tat, that's the Mahavakya. I am that Brahman, and that Brahman is me. If you just say, I am that Brahman, you know, there can be, I am Brahman, but Brahman is not me. But here, like I can say, this body is me, but I am not the body. But here, they make sure that you don't have that problem. You are that, and that is you. You can't say that here. The body is me, but I am free of the body. Sense organs are me, but I am free of the sense organs. The mind is me, but I am free of the mind. But in terms of Brahman yourself, you can't, you're not going to say that. You're not going to say, you know, I am Brahman, but Brahman is not me. I am Brahman, but Brahman is free of me. No. I am Brahman, and Brahman is me. It's not, I'm not part of Brahman. I'm not Mithya. dependent on Brahman and Brahman is free of me. No, I am Brahman and Brahman is me. You are Brahman and Brahman is you. You are that and that is you. So that's the Tvameva Tet. Tet Tvameva, Tvameva Tet. Okay? Alright, let's stop there. Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.
Yes. It occurred to me that some people might say, well, the mind is a product of the body, and so what you're talking about is states of mind, but the mind being a product of the body, it doesn't really prove that. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't really...
The mind being a product of the body doesn't really prove that.
Prove that... that the self is free of the mind. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, some people might say that these waking dream and deep sleep are mental states, which Vedanta also says. But then, people who believe that the mind is a product of the body would just say, well, those are just mental states. So what? Yeah.
Well, that's all right. I mean, there's different things that we have to... It's like a person saying that the brain produces consciousness or that type of thing, these type of arguments.
Yeah.
Then you have to go into the very nature of matter, which is a different argument.
Uh-huh.
But just to so that you can get the most out of this particular unfoldment.
Mm.
Don't think about it in so much as in terms of physical realities. Like, for instance, there's the mental reality and the physical reality, and then you can say the mental reality comes out of the physical reality. Don't worry in terms of this argument so much about the physical realities, but rather about what experience can you never be without. That's the key. What is it, what experience can you not negate or turn your back on? Yeah. That's what's so important about this particular unfoldment, because what is the essence of your being, and in fact will turn out from different arguments, is just the essence of your being is the very essence of matter itself. It is what is there. Right? But what is there is what cannot not be there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why even in the deep sleep state, the fact that knowership goes, enjoyership goes, well, it goes because that isn't your swarupa.
Mm.
Right? Which is something to understand. Even when we do one important thing about japa, when we do japa, is that you can come to directly appreciate that yourself is not performing any act of knowing or enjoying, that it's actually just your being, the me, right, is not performing an act of knowing anything. It's that you simply abide. Mm. So right now you can, if that's been differentiated, you can notice yourself, I'm free, I'm not engaging in anything, including knowership. Knowership is taking place because I have sense organs and a mind, right? But me, the me, is not engaged in the act of knowing. Because of me, there's everything is conscious. Because of me, everything is known. But the me, the self, is not performing an activity of knowing one thing over another thing. It's just the knownness, the very swarupa of the self, that everything enjoys the sense of knownness. But the names and forms that require subject-object differentiation, subject-object know or known, right, require mind and sense organs and all of that in order for this duality to be illumined from the standpoint of the jiva. I mean. But I'm not, the self is not performing a function.
You know, when you use the word self, I have to do a real quick switch from ignorance to knowledge to understand what you're saying, because usually my definition of self doesn't fit the statement that's being made unless I make that switch.
You have to make the switch, because otherwise I just don't use the Sanskrit and say Atma. Right? Mm. When I say the self, I mean the Atma. Mm.
But you have to stay on your toes, huh?
Yes. Of course you do. But it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. But I mean, I was noticing that process when I'm listening. You know, if I don't do it and just take it myself to be what I'm not, which is my normal definition, I get stuck in the words.
Yeah.
You know?
I do.
Did you have to make those kind of leaps too? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I may not have talked about it like that, but you know, what we call Dehatma Buddhi is very, very strong. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come to this knowledge, Dehatma Buddhi means the notion of the self being the deha, the body. And that includes all three shariras. The notion of the self being this body, this mind, the sense organs. And the reason for that is that, in fact, it is. Mm. You know, just like the pot is the clay. Mm. So you are this. But what you don't know is the other half of it. Mm-hmm. Is that you are this and you are free of this. Right? Mm-hmm. The body is you, but you are free of the body.
But to know it in that sense, it seems to me, then you have to have recognized that the body is Brahman. I mean, you have to have recognized that, because otherwise you can't really say that in that way, right?
Yeah, but when you're doing the Drik Drisha, which has to, in Drik Drisha means that see or seeing differentiation, right? That is. Without the seer-seeing differentiation, you can never separate consciousness from the body, mm-hmm. because the superimposition is so strong, you know. So that needs to be done. But then when that's done, you can't stop there, because then you have to look at, well, what is this body?
Yeah.
Is there consciousness over here and the body over here? Mm. What is the relationship between consciousness and the body? Then we have to really analyze this maya to see that actually this has no being apart from consciousness at all. This is the pot. Everything, you know, everything within duality is the pot that enjoys the Brahman clay. It has the Brahman clay for itself. So, but that's satyam mithya we can't do until we know the satyam. Until the satyam has been differentiated, you know, you can't appreciate the mithya.
I have a question. So, if I'm Brahman and Brahman is me, right? I can understand that one level, but the mind would say, okay, Brahman can make rain happen anywhere. I cannot make rain happen over here.
We
right
would
now.
Say that Brahman can't make rain happen. Ishwar makes rain happen.
Okay, but I cannot make rain happen.
But you're not Ishwar. From the standpoint of the Upadi, like you would say, like this Upadi, this jiva with body, mind, sense organs, doesn't have, it's not, you know, the sort of a Shaktiman. You don't have all power, all capacity like that Ishwar does.
So what's the difference between Ishwar and Brahman?
It would be like this. Let me use this analogy and then I'll tie it up. If I have, we use the wave ocean. The ocean is Ishwar, the wave is the jiva. Brahman is the water. So the self of Ishwar is the self of the jiva. The water of the ocean is the water of the waves. Right? And so Brahman is the self, which is the truth of Ishwar. But the truth of Ishwar is the truth, the jiva is part of Ishwar, just like the wave is part of the ocean. So you as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, is part of this whole creation. So you're like a wave in the ocean. And Brahman is the Brahman, which is the self of Ishwar, is the Atma of the individual. Right, so if you say, we call in Sanskrit, this is the jiva, the self of the self of the jiva is the Atma. The jiva self is the Atma. Ishwara self is Brahman. The Mahavakya is that Atma is Brahman. Tat Tvamasi, you are that. You, the individual you, is Brahman. We can say, like the Mahavakya, Hum Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Means this conscious being that I am is Brahman, which is the conscious being, the self of the whole creation. And so to make that clear, we look at this whole creation and then we say, okay, there's the individual in the creation, this individual, and then there's Ishwara, which is the Lord, the whole creation. So the jiva is part of Ishwara. So from the standpoint of the jiva, the individual, I can't say, I'm Ishwara, I'm not Ishwara, I'm part of Ishwara. I'm only part of the Lord. Like the wave would have to say, I'm not the ocean, I'm just one little wave in the ocean. How could you say that I'm the ocean? I'm not the ocean. So you have to go to a different level where you recognize that the self of the individual is the self of the ocean. So we say the self of the jiva is called Atma. The self of Ishwara is called Brahman. The Mahavakya, which is what the Upanishads reveal, is that the Atma is Brahman and Brahman is Atma. Tvameva tet tvameva, right? That Brahman is, you are. Brahman is you and you are Brahman. So the self from which the entire creation comes is the self, is yourself. The self from which the whole creation comes, that is yourself.
Well, that's so astonishing.
So myself and Ishwara self is the same,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So then how is it that myself is not taking on all the characteristics of Ishwara self?
Well,
there's some limitations there, obviously.
No. The nature of the self is just Satchitananda consciousness, which is pure existence, which is limitless. That's Brahman. All of these, the qualities of Ishwara, that belongs to Maya. That's the Maya Upadi. So if we take the total Maya Upadi, then there's all the Sarvashaktiman, Sarvajnyatvam, all of these things, all of the Aishwaryatvam, you know, all of the capacities, all of the gunas, and the infinite measure. That's for Ishwara. But the jiva is part of Ishwara. The jiva is also Maya. It's part of Ishwara. And so where jiva has this sarvajnyatvam, which means omniscience, the jiva has upajnyatvam, limited knowledge. Ishwara has all knowledge, the jiva has limited knowledge. Ishwara has all capacity, the jiva has limited capacity. So all of this dvaita, all of this duality belongs to Maya.
Could you say like this, as you said, Ishwara is all
all knowledge, all capacity, all power, all
and all the laws that go with it, including rain. Whereas we're part of Ishvara, and in our mind, we create, like as you said, in dream or whatever, our own.
We're
the Ishvara of our
dream.
Dreams are creations. We can create rain in our mind, but we can't create rain out there. So.
Yeah, that's true. It's like you get to be a little Ishvara in terms of your imagination. You know? Yeah, really. Like, I can imagine a universe, I can imagine a situation, I can come in and save the day, I can do whatever I want in it, right? I can make it rain. That's subjective imagination. Whereas Ishvara is the total capacity. But because the material is the same, the Maya, of the total Maya of Ishvara, you have all of that Maya also, but in a limited capacity. You're made of the same material. But from the standpoint of the self, there's no duality. Right? It's not like Brahman is big and Atma is small. There's no time, space, or anything in consciousness. Consciousness is just one non-dual consciousness. It doesn't have parts. It's not. You're not a part of Brahman. You are Brahman. Right? You're not a little piece of Brahman. You are Brahman, totally, 100%. Brahman is you. You are Brahman. It's not. You know, you Brahman includes you and you're a part of Brahman. It's not that. It's you are Brahman, Brahman is you. Because from the standpoint of consciousness, there's no duality. There's not big or small. All of these things are inapplicable. All of those belong to the creation, to Maya.
So there's not a big Brahman and a little Brahman. I shouldn't feel like...
You're not just a little bitty Brahman.
No, I'm not a little one. Dude.
No. You're not a big one either. You're just a one.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not big Brahman.
You have to kind of let go of those categories then. I mean, that's
completely. Those categories all belong to Maya. All belong to duality. Because the whole Maya comes from, that's why it's good to use the dream or imagination. Because you can see the duality comes in the manifest and goes unmanifest. Like if I ask you to think of a meadow, the meadow becomes manifest. If you withdraw the thought of the meadow, it goes unmanifest. When the meadow is unmanifest, the time, space, duality of the meadow is no more. Right? So from the standpoint of Brahman, there is no duality. There is no time or space or qualities. There's not big or small. There's not right or left. You know?
Did you say Brahman's like the water?
Like the water in the sense of it's the truth of the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why does the mind keep thinking about qualities then? I mean,
You keep thinking about qualities because everything that we experience within duality has to do with qualities and differentiation. And now you have to recognize the self that's free of all of that.
So is Dharma part of the Maya then?
Mm-hmm. Anything within duality. Anything within time, space, anything that can be objectified, anything that's subject to change. That's why if you think of, like say, I ask you to think of a meadow or imagine a dream world. Everything that comes in that dream world is Maya. It's made of the Maya. So all of the order, all of the laws, all of the elements, all of the emotions, all of the psychology, all of the duality, everything, you know, everything is Maya. What isn't Maya is the self, the being from which this manifestation has come and into which it goes.
I guess I asked that question in the sense of Kant had the moral imperative that kind of existed.
But the moral imperative is the nature of Ishvara.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And Ishvara is the manifestation of Brahman. Right? So it's not that Ishvara is away from Brahman. Brahman is the very self that has this Maya capacity. Just not. It's not like the Ishvara or Maya is a way removed from Brahman. You know, it's just that it doesn't have any capacity to change or modify Brahman. That's the nature of Maya.
And the willpower to make laws and decide how the universe unfolds, that's
all Ishwara. But there's no Ishwara sitting around deciding how to do things.
No.
Because Ishwara itself is beginningless. So Ishwara is not saying, I think I'll create a universe. Hmm. That's a Christian mythology. Those are Christian stories. In the,
so where does that stop then?
It has no beginning. Ishwara doesn't have a beginning for there to be a decision. Ishwara doesn't say, I think I'll create a universe. Ishwara was never not there. The universe, the cyclical nature of the creation was never not there. And so the creation is what it is. Brahman is what it is. Ishwara is what he is.
So you don't look at him like he willed, something was willed.
No. This is it. This creation is an infinite expression. And it's beginningless. Cyclically beginningless. Mm. Otherwise you have a little man in heaven who's willing something.
Yeah.
But then you say, you have to think, well, who created that heaven and put the little man in it? You know?
Somebody is trying to tell my friend something about, you know, the intelligence that's woven into the creation. Mm-hmm. That you can
infinite
see.
Order, yeah.
Yeah, and you mm-hmm. can see it. And I said, you just see it. And he said, well, it doesn't seem very intelligent to me. He said that man, you know, can destroy the whole planet. That doesn't seem intelligent. And I didn't really have a good answer to that. And, you know, I said, well, you know, man has free will and, you know, can abuse things and that's what can happen. But it was interesting that he said this, and to him that didn't seem intelligent, that could happen. You know, that the universe was created as such that possibility was there.
Yeah, you know why? Because we want to have a good father.
Yeah, that's what I should.
You know, the good father that doesn't let anything bad happen.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
That's usually
the way it is.
It's not the way it is.
That's a very Christian.
Is it?
Yeah, very Christian argument.
Because I got that one pretty bad, you know.
Yeah, the West has that. You know, if God is good, this is one of the arguments, theological arguments. If God is all powerful, you know, then why would He allow for evil deeds to happen? You know, and so. If he is all powerful and allows for evil deeds, then he himself must not be good. Right? But if he is good and there are evil deeds, then he must not be all powerful. So it is either an all powerful villain or a good weakling. So these are big discussions that go on.
Do you know Billy Graham, when I heard him being interviewed once, and he said when he died, the one question he wanted to ask God was why God allows evil to exist, why God had created evil.
Yeah.
It was his big quandary.
Sure. It's a major question, because God is looked at, you know, as a creator. Yeah. But if you look at God as the creator, he has to, who created God? Really? But if God wasn't created, then it's a whole different situation.
So what corrective measures are we supposed to take in this picture? I mean, you know, it's a thing, we're swimming in this, you know.
To japa? I wanted to come back here about japa, and actually it I'm not being facetious, it actually...
It relates
to that perfectly. And because who says something's evil, from God's point of view, it's not evil. Not if you understand Vedanta. All that's arising is arising. And from our limited perspective, as a jiva that thinks that it's having life now and it's going to get snuffed out, things can be bad. But
Well, not evil in the sense, in this way I agree actually, but everything's contained within an infinite order. You know, and so say if something is causing harm, that action is still contained, you know, within the greater scheme of things.
But by doing japa, so I was really interested in what you were saying about japa, because you were talking about attaining a subtle mind state in which we understand very differently, right?
Well, I was saying that when you repeat a mantra, you know, and you understand how japa works, what happens is that you can, the repetition of the mantra will help you to differentiate the constant backdrop, which is your being, from the rising and setting of this mantra. It becomes very, very clear. That's why japa can be so, so powerful. Mm-hmm. And then when you recognize that, you can recognize the mithyatva. These thoughts are rising and setting, rising and setting in me, who am not doing anything. But me, the very me, the conscious being that I am, who am not doing any activity whatsoever. And so japa helps to make me aware of that, to differentiate that. Gives me that viveka. And then I can, because all I'm doing is repeating a thought, a mantra is a thought, I can, once I understand that, I can see that relationship, that reality in every thought. So japa is very, very useful for that way, in that way. We'll work on japa. Can hear it's probably time to start doing that again.
Okay.
It's a beautiful meditation technique.
Karen, I'm still a little unclear about our relationship to Ishvara, like, in the question of, like, why we don't have this experience of omnipotence.
Oh.
You know, and, like, how that's accounted for.
Okay, well, first of all, first thing to remember is that the Atman itself is consciousness, not consciousness of something. And so, same for Brahman. I mean, Brahman, the self of Ishwara, is consciousness, not conscious of something. That means then that the knowership belongs to the upadhi. Your mind and sense organs are limited, right? They exist as limited entities within the creation. And so what you know right now, you might be thinking whatever you're thinking, is different from what I'm thinking. Your experiences that are contained in your mind as memories, etc., are different from mine. So our minds are different from each other, and they're limited, and there are many different minds. But Ishwara's mind is the whole Maya Upadhi. Right? So that's the omniscient Sarvajnatva. Your mind is part of that Maya Upadhi. So it's limited.
So when we say Ishvara itself is Ishvara, though, what's that precise relationship?
The self that you are, the conscious being, is the self of Ishvara. There's only one self. The minds are different. Right? Your mind is different from your mind is different from your mind, and all of these minds exist within Ishvara. But there's one self that illumines the whole Ishvara, the whole Maya Upadhi. And that one self that illumines the whole Maya Upadhi illumines every part of it. So each, just say in this room, each individual here says, I am a conscious being, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being. The conscious being that they're referring to as me is the one self that illumines the whole. And so from the standpoint of me, the conscious being, I am Ishvara. But from the standpoint of the upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, I am part of Ishvara. But from the standpoint of me, myself, I am Ishvara.
I guess I'm interested if, like, ever one ever has the experience of Ishvara, like, if that ever kind of got a model, like, if that ever occurs.
Not really, though. There are some tapas and some upasanas that you can do to have some experience like that. It's a very exalted type of experience where you can have some sort of experience of Ishvara, but but for the most part, not under normal circumstances now.
Well, it seems really odd, because if Ishvara has this infinite mind and it's illumined, he's conscious of all the minds.
Yeah, of everything, everything that's within that creation.
Well, that seems like an immense amount of information that would be going on. I mean,
it's infinite and all happening at once. It's a little hard for us to have that.
I mean, Jesus.
You know, but that's true. You can't have that understanding of Ishvara's Upadhi.
Well, don't think of Ishvara as a being.
It is a being, though, in that
not as a
human being. No. But you know, another way maybe of thinking about that, may seem so overwhelming, because you can't imagine that. It's like the cell in your toe imagining this body. You can't even get there. You know, it's too far to go.
Yeah.
But you know, when you have a thought or an imagination or a dream, there's an incredible amount of knowledge, but you don't think of it that way. You don't think about it because it's just natural to you.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's nothing. You know, and so whatever the Upadhi is, that's your Upadhi, and the whole thing is known. See, the other thing to kind of grasp the illusion of the whole thing is that the knownness of the infinite Upadhi or the limited Upadhi, the knownness experience, it is known, actually is the very swarupa, it's the very nature of the self. If you take away the whole duality, what is left is the Atma, the conscious being, and that experience is known, because it's self-evident, it's self-conscious, you know, it's self-luminous, and that self-luminous experience we label in English as it is known, right? And that knownness, then, in reference, now we look out and we're seeing all of these names and forms in this room. They are all known. Mm-hmm. If I get rid of all of the names and forms, what is left? Consciousness, which is known. So consciousness, that is knownness, which is the nature of consciousness, is just with consciousness itself. Now I have the image of the room, and now the room is known. I collapse the image of the room, and now the is known remains, but just as me.
And this knownness isn't limited by the
Upadhi. It has nothing to do with duality.
It has nothing to do with the Upadhi.
It's non-dual. Knownness is non-dual. Isness is non-dual. Isness is knownness. Isness is consciousness. And there's no experience that you can ever have that touches that or separates, or separate from that, or is away from that, or can infiltrate that or do anything to that. That is the subtler than the subtlest. That's the nitya. You it's timeless. There's nothing you can do to it. You can't harm it or change it in any way. It's free, it is you.
What would you say about people who attain Siddhi and they can make it rain? I've seen that, so...
And we can do rituals and make it rain also.
Yeah, so there's some kind of way in which they penetrate through some kind of knowledge, the Maya.
No, those siddhis are available to be gained.
Right.
But there's different upasanas and tapas and things that you need to do. There's certain things you need to do to gain those siddhis. You just don't go like that and have a siddhi.
No, but I'm saying
you have to work for them.
There are kinds of knowledge, aren't they, which cut through our limited.
Well, I would say you can say they're kinds of knowledge, but those not those things, those capacities, most people don't work for.
No, no.
Or don't even know how to work for them.
No, no.
But
no,
they're there to be gained.
Nor are they necessarily desirable.
That's right.
But I'm responding to his question, which is okay. So if you know if the consciousness within me is that which is the one consciousness, why is it that I don't have all powers? And I've been around people who have a lot of powers. I don't know if they have all powers or what cause and effect can be sent.
Well, you say you've been around people that have siddhis.
Yeah.
But still, their siddhis don't match Ishvara.
Probably not. Hard to say. But
I would say they probably don't.
Probably don't.
Yeah.
And at the same time, in the Vedic tradition, we do rituals. We do
invoke the different laws.
Yeah.
To get certain results.
So, I think.
See, even by the fact that it's a siddhi is something that's gained.
Right.
And also can be lost. A siddhi can be gained or lost. If you don't accept that, you can just say it can be gained. That means there's a time when you didn't have the siddhi, right? Which means that you're limited.
Okay.
Right? But that doesn't mean the siddhis aren't there or that they're not powerful. It's just that you're gaining, you're using the laws of Ishwara to gain certain capacities.
Okay.
And so you're limited because you yourself have to gain those capacities. If you're comparing yourself to Ishwara.
Oh, well, not exactly. I'm just kind of responding to his question of...
making it rain or not.
If we are essentially the self, why is it that we don't have certain powers?
But remember, the self itself, from a Vedanta perspective, the self is just consciousness.
Right.
We're talking about the Maya Upadhi. All of the powers, all of the vibhutis, all of that thing, all of that kind of stuff belongs to Maya.
Mm-hmm. Right. I got that.
Yeah. So it's the self is only one. The self,
right,
from which the whole creation comes is only one self.
Right.
The self of Ishwara is yourself.
Right.
But from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, that has limitations because it's part of the whole, it's not the whole. That's the only limitation. It's made of the same Maya. But it's part of the whole, it's not the whole.
But don't we remove those limitations as we come to know the self?
No, because the self is already free of limitation. You come to recognize...
But I mean, as a limited being, I may remove some of my limitation by...
No, you recognize that the self that you've always been is limitless and always has been limitless. But that the Maya Upadhi remains limited.
Okay.
But the body remains limited and will die and whatnot. But the self of the body, the truth of you, is limitless and always has been.
I'll work on that
and I've got to also unfold it more.
Yeah. I think what came to me also over this discussion was that it's good that we don't have the same creative powers of Ishwara, because we'll be interfering with each other's karmic.
You're chaos, huh?
Yeah.
We have...
My neighbor made it rain. I think that's the city council.
Okay, Gayle, let's stop.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Shut up again.